This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Hey everybody, the Hockey News Podcast is back. Matt Larkin here with Ken Campbell and Ryan Kennedy, and it feels like it's kind of rare for some reason.
The band's back together.
Yeah, the band, I feel like the band's apart more than it is together, so now it's an event.
When a lot of solo tours going on
here. Yeah, a lot of solo.
Some side projects.
But good to see you, fellas. Yeah, do your thing.
Yeah,
you're cool. Waking up today, I mean, or staying up last night to learn some unbelievable news. I mean, Vegas never stops surprising us.
They do not.
Over and over and over. And now, this is real life. Mm-hmm. The Vegas Golden Knights are conference finalists. I can't believe it. But I can't. I mean, like, at this point, maybe you can, because nothing they do is surprising anymore, because all they do is surprise.
Yeah.
It's a weird paradox.
Yeah.
At this point, I mean, based on what we've seen from Vegas going 8-2 across the first two rounds, is this starting to feel like they could be favorites against the Jets or the Predators, or is that still going too far? Should we still continue to doubt Vegas?
I think it actually depends on the opponent.
Yeah,
I think I would favor them against Nashville, because they gave Nashville problems, and speed teams give the Predators problems. But with Winnipeg, I think there's just too much high-end depth up front, where the Jets could hang with Vegas, and I don't think Vegas has an answer for Dustin Bufflin.
The Jets could you imagine?
I know.
Could you imagine? Okay, like, let's back this up to a year ago right now.
Let's deconstruct.
Okay,
this.
and so someone says, yeah, I think the Jets could hang with Vegas in the conference final.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, Winnipeg didn't make the playoffs last year, and Vegas didn't exist.
Right.
And could you imagine if someone had said that? People would be like, man, I want what this guy's smoking. Anyways, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny, because you talked about them being surprising. I thought LA would win the first round, but I did think Vegas would beat San Jose. So I'm at the point now where you just have to treat them like any other contending team and look at the pros and cons of their lineup and say, they're just an NHL team, and they're a very good NHL team. And we do have to have these conversations of, well, how do they stack up against Tampa?
Right.
I think they go into whatever series they're playing as the favorite, regardless of whether it's Winnipeg or Nashville. I think they'll go in.
You think
in
Vegas would be the favorite?
Would be considered the favorite. Wow. Yeah. I mean, but I agree with Ryan. Like, I think Nashville has, I'm having some serious doubts about Nashville now. Like, they're just not playing with any level of consistency at all. We're going to talk about this later, but they're not getting goaltending. Winnipeg, I feel like Winnipeg would be a better, would give them a way more difficult time than Nashville would at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And right now, if the playoffs end today, is Marc-Andre Fleury the Conn Smythe? I think it'd be hard to go against Marc-Andre Fleury.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah, absolutely. 951 save percentage?
Unbelievable.
Yeah, or Jake Guentzel. I mean, if they get past this series, Jake Guentzel's got to be, if Pittsburgh gets past Washington.
I'm mad at Jake Guentzel, by the way. I took him in my hockey pool expecting he'd score 35 goals, and he will score 35 goals in the playoffs.
Right.
Son of a bitch. Come on. Jeez, I thought I was so smart. I was so proud of myself. I guess we should talk. I mean, even though the Boston Bruins are eliminated, but I think the licking incident will transcend a second round defeat, and we'll still be talking about it for months. I don't know. I have some weird thoughts, and I haven't tweeted them because I was afraid to tweet them on Brad Marchand's licking. Here's the thing. Okay, first of all, I hate the idea that people are trying to equate it with a sexual assault. I think that really trivializes real sexual assault, so I'm going to put that aside.
Right.
But on the lighter side of things, with so many things that Brad Marchand does, and I've gotten roasted on Twitter for saying anything resembling this in the past, but sometimes I can't help but think, he's kind of good for the game. I like there being a villain who licks people.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I know people say it's disgusting, it goes against hockey culture, et cetera, but I don't know. To me, hockey is a sport so devoid of personality, and I don't like the Brad Marchand that's low-bridging people or headshots, elbows, all that kind of stuff.
Right.
And he's licking people I don't know. He's just a perfect little bastard. He's a little villain.
Yeah, yeah.
And I start to wonder sometimes, is that good for the game? And do we need a licker out there?
Well, I do sometimes think that it's rather dubious what hockey culture, and I'm doing air quotes in a podcast. What a hockey culture and the NHL view as being abhorrent. You know, like, I mean, you know, headshots and cross-checking, okay. Licking, not okay. I mean, in the grand scheme of things, it's not, you know, I mean, it's pretty gross. And
it's worse for Brad Marchand. He's licking sweat.
Yeah.
He gets the worst.
But I do sometimes chuckle at what the league, you know, chooses to, you know, go after, like diving, you know? Mm. Okay, like that's the biggest problem? Okay, I guess it is. I don't know. I mean, but you know, I mean, these things that seem to, you know, cross the line when it comes to this, you know, hockey culture, like those are so abhorrent. And I mean, Brad Marchand licking people is pretty gross, but in the grand scheme of things, I'm not sure it's, you know, the worst thing that anybody's ever done.
Yeah, I just feel like it's like the slippery slope of, you know, like it's licking and then it's like, is it going to be like Wet Willy's next? Where is he now? Like, where does it stop unless somebody just punches him straight in the face? Mm-hmm. Which,
well, you'd
want to
give him an uppercut because then he'd have his tongue out.
It's kind of funny how people are like, this is why we need to get rid of the instigator. So somebody can just punch Brad Marchand in the face for doing this kind of stuff. Because, like, it is... like, there's certain things you consent to when you play hockey. And I know what you're saying, Ken, about where priorities are. But, like, people, you know, it's like, okay, I might get body checked. And it's funny because you talk to enforcers the past couple of years, and a lot of them are like, yeah, I know I can get concussions. Some of them even told me, like, yeah, I might get CTE, but...
yeah.
I understand the risks.
Yeah, you don't go out there thinking you're going to get scurvy.
Right. Yeah, really. Yeah.
It's like being part of the game in The Wire, the show The Wire. You know, you accept that if you're in the game,
right,
you accept the consequences.
Yeah, exactly. But like licking is not part of the game. Like there's a certain, you are a worker at your place of business and you do not expect that. I know what you're saying about the headlines and the attention it gets, but the thing I can't get past is, like, Brad Marchand's a really good player. Like, he doesn't need
He's an elite player.
But maybe he does need to do this to be given the edge to be that elite player. And I'm playing devil's advocate here. I'm not saying that he does need it, but, I mean, I agree with you. He doesn't need to be like this, right?
He kills penalties.
But maybe he does.
Maybe
he needs to play
with that edge.
Maybe he needs to have that mentality to be able to... to have the edge that he requires. I don't know. You know, I mean, we talked about Vegas and how you can't figure it out. Like, this one is just like you can't even, like, explain it to somebody. You know, like I thought John Cooper's response to the whole thing was really good. Like, he was just... did you see his press conference when he was asked? He was just, like, flummoxed.
Right.
You know? And then all of a sudden he just said, like, really? Like, if I walked up to you and licked you right from the bottom of your face to the top of your face right now, how would you feel?
Yeah.
You know, and that's really the only way you could explain this.
I think it's psychological warfare. Like, it's all part of... and we've talked about this before, that I think Brad Marchand is one of the smartest players in the NHL.
Yeah,
sure.
And I think what he's doing, he's messing with people, right?
Yeah.
And that's just one more way that he does it. I think he knows exactly what he's doing. It's not random. It's not maniacal. It's like, okay, I'm going to do something really weird. It's going to get everyone talking. It's going to just... freak out the other team.
Yeah.
I guess, I mean, Boston still lost a series.
It failed miserably. In this case, it did. It's true.
But I still think, I mean, and I said the same thing. I think what I got in trouble for on Twitter was at the All-Star game when he was blowing kisses to the crowd. And I said, oh, I love villains like this. But then people pointed out, well, what about all his cheap shots? Fair enough.
Right.
But I still like the idea of someone, he's kind of like a movie character. You know, he's a cartoon.
Mm.
And I think hockey doesn't have enough of that personality.
Right.
So I do like that element. So I admittedly, my first reaction was like, oh man, that's awesome. I can't help it. I was like, he licked somebody.
Yeah.
Switching over to the Predators and goaltending, as you hinted at, Ken, it's been an interesting series, the Jets and Predators. I mean, we knew the Jets had an extremely high-octane offense.
Yeah.
But it's been a bit of open season on Pekka Rinne. And if we go back to the playoffs last year, Rinne was dominant in the first half of the playoffs. But when the games got bigger, and especially the Stanley Cup Finals, especially on the road, he crumbled. And he seemed to have, I don't know, a mental block. So I'm wondering right now, are you guys seeing that in Rinne? Are you seeing someone struggling? Or do you think he's getting hung out to dry by his defense? Is it not his fault? Or is it fair to start wondering, is Pekka Rinne... not a big game goalie?
Yeah. Mm. Again, the things we thought we'd never hear.
Yeah.
Is he getting hung out to dry by his
defense? by that unbelievable defense. I don't know. But I want to give him the benefit of the doubt and ask that question.
I think you're onto something with him not being a big money goaltender. The body of work would suggest that, without question. I mean, he was not good in the Stanley Cup final last year, and he hasn't been good in this series. And I mean, you know, if you just look at it, he is being outplayed by Connor Hellebuck.
Yeah.
And Connor Hellebuck has had his moments in this series too. Mm-hmm. He hasn't, there have been times when he hasn't been very good, and he's still outplaying Pecorini by a pretty large margin. And I think the big difference is that I really think that goaltending in the playoffs, the whole thing has kind of changed. It used to be, in order to win a Stanley Cup, you needed a goalie that had to be lights out for four rounds, mm-hmm. steal games, you know, be the MVP, be the Conn Smythe winner, and that's how you won a Stanley Cup. Now, you don't need that, I don't think. You just need a goalie who maybe once in a while is like that, but just is good. He just has to be good, and he just doesn't have to lose your series.
Right.
Mm. And I think that's what Pecorine's doing right now.
Connor Hellebuck,
game three, Connor Hellebuck lets in three goals on 12 shots in the first period,
mm-hmm.
right? They go up 3-0, you know, and then Winnipeg comes back and scores six on Rene. Now, in the second and third, I mean, Winnipeg really shut it down. They only had, I think Nashville only had 18 shots in the second and third. But the fact of the matter is Hellebuck, you know, gave up those three crappy goals, and then he locked it down when he had to. It was kind of the Grant Fuhr goaltending, right? Mm-hmm. Let in four or five, but when you need to make that save, make that save. They haven't been getting that from Pecorine, that he needs to make a save once in a while, and he ain't doing it.
And the one thing I'll just throw in there quickly is, numbers-wise, that's exactly what Hellebuck was all season. Because I was crunching these numbers recently. Mm. His save percentage before the All-Star break was .923, I think, after .924, or vice versa.
Right.
His save percentage was .911 or better in every single month. And he was among the bottom of the league in terms of goalies that had starter-level workloads in terms of facing high-danger chances. Mm. He faced mainly low-danger scoring chances. So I argue that Hellebuck, you can make a case he was almost overrated in terms of he didn't have to make too many tough saves this year.
Right, right.
But
right.
he made those easy saves. Right. So that's exactly who he
makes
is.
The saves. He makes the saves he has to make.
Well, and what I was going to say is what I thought was very telling is that Paul Maurice didn't yank Hellebuck after those three goals. He stuck with them, and I think obviously that speaks to the confidence that the Jets staff have in a young goaltender. And we've already seen Rinne yanked a couple of times, you know, with, you know, reason, no doubt.
Yeah.
But I always feel with goaltenders, particularly with veteran ones, the key is, you know, a lot of them can be very intimidating because of their body of work. You think of guys like Jonathan Quick and Carey Price. But once teams aren't afraid of you, that's a whole different ballgame,
mm-hmm.
you know? Mm-hmm. And I mean, like, using Carey Price as an example, you know, Montreal's not a good team. If you have good shooters, and we've seen this when Montreal has been in the playoffs in past years, Tampa Bay was like, oh, well, we can score on Carey Price. We're not scared of Carey Price.
Right.
That series is over.
Yeah.
And I think what we're seeing here, you know, Pittsburgh, they were not afraid of Pecorine last year,
right.
particularly in Pittsburgh. But that's kind of a problem. I mean, you can be technically sound, and that's great. And, you know, Pecorine is a very good goaltender in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah.
But Winnipeg knows they've got the shooters.
Right. And on the flip side of that, too, Ryan, is that when you've got a goalie like that, you are far less prone. Like, you're going to stick with them. You're going to stick with them. Like, I mean, I think Pecorine's work in this series merits the debate.
Right.
Do you start Yari Saros UC Saros in game six?
Right. He's being poised bad
do you,
enough.
Do you start him in game six?
Mm.
It's not, but it's not a debate because it's Pecorine.
And he's going to win the Vezina trophy.
Because it's Pecorine. and Pecorine, too, in his defense in these playoffs and in the playoffs, has historically been very strong in the next game after he's been lousy.
Mm.
So I would expect him to be really good. But you can't even have that conversation, right?
Yeah.
Because it's Pecorine. No, you're not gonna take the net away from Pecorine when in reality maybe that's what they need to do.
Yeah.
You know?
It's a really good point. And it's interesting, like, Rene is generally perceived as one of the best two or three athlete goaltenders in the league, up there with Quick and Fleury. And goaltending experts that I've talked to in the past say that when Rene's struggling, it's because his athleticism starts to work against him and he starts to be really busy in the net. Mm-hmm. Because he's so cat-like in his movements. But if you're pressing, you're struggling, you start overplaying the puck.
Right.
So I think maybe that's what Rene's doing right now.
Yeah,
and it's interesting, too. Right now he's got the legacy of not being a big game goaltender, but it's not too late to turn that around. And what made me think
Absolutely
of it,
not.
We're working on a special project right now, the top 100 goalies of all time. And I was doing stuff with Ed Belfour the last couple weeks. And a lot of his career, before he won that cup with Dallas, he was perceived as that great goaltender, multiple Vezina trophies, who used to crumble. I did the air quotes again, too. He crumbled in the playoffs.
Quote, then, unquote.
And he changed it in his mid-30s, right? So
yeah, yeah.
It can be done. It's not too late for
him. Oh, no. I mean, if he turns a series around, they win, and then he goes on a roll, everybody forgets about this.
But, right. Even though he's in his mid-30s now, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, if Nashville loses this series, I mean, I think there's... I don't think you can just point at Pekka Rinne's goaltending as the reason. I mean, this team as a team has been confounding in these playoffs. I mean, they're going to... Basically, to win this series now, they're going to have to do what they haven't done in these playoffs yet, and that's put two really good games together, which they haven't done. They haven't done. And this defense that is supposed to be so dangerous and so productive, 4 goals. Roman Josi has no goals. Ryan Ellis has no goals. You know? P.K. Subban has 3 and Matthias Ekholm has 1. And that's it.
Yeah.
Wow.
Very,
you know?
Very unprecedented.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's part of what's wrong with this team, but I don't think it's all of what has been going wrong for this team.
That's fair. And I really like the point you said, Ryan, too, about them breaking a goalie mentally. And it reminds me, so when I was doing this Belfour thing, I spoke to Ken Hitchcock for a while about it. And he told me it was in the 2004 playoffs, when it was the Flyers playing the Leafs. And he said to his team, he said, "Don't focus on the players. You must break Belfour. This is the guy. If we break him, we break the series."
Mm.
And that's exactly what they did. So it's a good example of teams literally think that way.
Yeah.
Did they ever break
him in that series?
Yeah, they broke him
did
in Game 7, right?
Yeah,
they blew him out in Game 7 in that series. San Jose Sharks are now eliminated from the playoffs. And I think they're a team that has some tough decisions to make. I mean, all teams do, but they're in a weird spot because a lot of their core is older. I'm curious what they're going to do. I mean, first of all, I guess we'll start with Joe Thornton. I mean, he didn't get healthy in time to play. Last year, I mean, I always said the money talks, and signing for $8 million to me meant that they were really having to sell him on staying if they required that much money, right?
Mm-hmm.
So now I'm wondering if you're Joe Thornton, I mean, assuming you're going to keep playing, which I think he will, do you want to go back to the Sharks, or is it time to move on and try and catch on to a new contender?
Well, I think it'll all come down to money in turn. I mean, if he's willing to take a really significant home down discount and not go on a long-term contract, because, I mean, Nick Lidstrom did that, right? He went on one-year deals until for the last 4 or 5 years of his career, you know? So, I mean, it's not an insult to Joe Thornton for the San Jose Sharks to say, okay, we're going to give you 4.5 or 5 on a one-year deal.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll see how it works out, and maybe we'll do the same thing next year. That's not an insult to Joe Thornton. But Joe Thornton may say, you know, I kind of want to go somewhere where I can get a 3-year deal or, a 2-year deal.
Or a 1-year deal for big money.
For huge money. Yeah.
I mean, it makes a lot. I mean, everyone likes to link the Leafs to everything. But, I mean, the Leafs are going to be looking for a fourth line center. They have Patrick Marleau. They have a 1-year window before the Matthews and Marner deals kick in where they could throw a big chunk of change on a 1-year deal
to be there.
A third or fourth line.
Yeah,
center.
Exactly. But what you don't want to do in this situation is give big money and term, especially term.
Term's everything.
To a 38-year-old guy who's injury prone. Like, I mean, Joe Thornton's going to be in the Hall of Fame. He's one of the greatest setup men that the game has ever seen. He's a wonderful guy. His leadership qualities are beyond reproach. He makes everybody feel like they're part of the effort. He's great, all those things. But you can't do it. You just cannot do that.
I feel like at this point in his career, if he wants to win a Stanley Cup, it's going to be elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Like, San Jose's not in that window right now. And like you said, he's coming off injury. He's not a fast guy to begin with. Speed was never his game. I feel like if I'm a GM of a team, I say, like, look, Joe, you know, we think you could be a great fit here, but... You know, A, you got to sort of prove that you can still be at the top of your game given where you are in your career. And B, like, we got to do like a prove it contract here. 1 year. I mean, if he wants to win,
but you do it, you prove it because you can sign him to an incentive based deal.
Exactly.
Right. So you sign him for $1.5 million as his base salary.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he plays 20 games, he gets another $2 million.
Yeah.
He gets 60 assists, he gets another $2 million, whatever, right?
Yeah.
So you can do that with him. And, you know, another thing they can do is just, you know, I mean, if he wants to go to a team that is a Stanley Cup contender, any Stanley Cup contender, it's going to be sort of up against the cap. Mm. They can just say to Joe, look, Joe, you've made what, $98 million over the course of your career. We're not going to give you much money, but we are going to give you a chance to win.
Yeah, and I think conversely that like San Jose needs to move on, because if they re-sign him for like $8 million again, which I'm not saying they would, they're not helping themselves. Like San Jose needs to start thinking about the future more. And I think that they have to look at it and say, well, Marlowe's already gone. Thornton, we should probably move on because, you know, John Tavares might be out there. Mm-hmm. And,
yeah,
you know, I mean, Evander Kane, we have to think about whether we want to bring him back or not. He played very well for them. And it really seemed like, at least short term, that was a great environment.
Great fit.
Yeah. I think you have to start making those decisions and look at your franchise and say, what do we want to be in 2 years?
Yeah, that's fair. And I think, to me, in this day and age, it's not, money's never the problem anymore. It's term. Term's everything, right?
Yeah.
So you can find a team out there that has a 1 year window of comfort where they can throw a pretty good chunk of change at Thornton, and nobody's going to consider, like, any 1 year deal, no one considers a 1 year deal a bad deal, really. It's always, albatross contracts are contracts that are long.
Exactly.
Not lucrative long, right?
Yeah.
So I think Thornton's going to, he's going to find what he needs somewhere. Some team's going to pay him what he wants.
Mm.
Unless, as you say, as we've said, like if his number one priority is to win a Stanley Cup, then that's got to be his number one priority.
Yes.
So he goes to one of four or five teams in the league, and he signs a low ball incentive based contract,
like Brad Richards stuff.
Yeah.
Right. Fair.
Yeah.
And sticking with the Sharks, Ryan, you touched on Evander Kane, and I'm glad because I wanted to mention him as well. It's interesting because he did seem like he really found a groove there, but we know with Kane in the past, like he emotionally, when he's up and he's in a good situation. But I mean, if you're Evander Kane, you come back to the Sharks next year and Thornton's gone and maybe they don't re-sign Tavares, then are you not even necessarily in a winning situation again? So if you're Evander Kane, I mean, I can see the incentive for the Sharks to bring him back, but if you're Kane, are you not going to at least explore your other options, or do you think the Sharks really are a great fit for him?
Well, I think they are, and then you've got to look at that as, you know, I mean, let's be realistic here, right? And I mean, you know, again, it comes down to priorities, right? It comes down to, does he want to win? Does he want a good, comfortable situation? Does he want to make money? Well, I think he can probably check off almost all three of those boxes, because, you know, I mean, San Jose will be, they won't be great, but they'll be a playoff team.
Yeah.
So that checks off that box. It's a great fit, a great city, a great place to raise your kids. I don't think he has kids. But, you know, I mean, it could be a place for the future. And, I mean, they'd be able to afford, you know, especially if Joe isn't back, they'd be able to afford to pay him on a pretty good buck on a 3 or 4 year deal. And that, I think that would check off a lot of boxes for him.
Yeah, I think San Jose is a great spot for him. You know, we've seen him in the past where it hasn't been a good fit and hasn't worked out, but with the Sharks, it seems to work. And I think they've got enough talent there where he's never going to be on an island. You know, they got Brent Burns, they got Vlasic on the back end too. They have a pretty nice array of forwards who are not like old. Like if you take Thornton off that squad, like Logan Couture is not old. Mm-hmm. Joe Pavelski's not old. You got Thomas Hertl, who's still quite young for the NHL.
He's getting better, right? Like
he's getting better. He's becoming more of a two-way
player.
And I think he's more asserting himself more, and like I think he's feeling more like he's a bigger part of this team.
No, he's not just a dream blessing in disguise in that sense.
More
responsibility.
Yeah, he's not just the kid anymore. Like, they need Thomas Hertl to be, like, an important top six player.
Right.
It's not just, like, this fun kind of, like, along for the ride thing where it's like, he scored 4 goals one game.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
No, I agree. I think Thomas Hertl is a very important part of that squad now. And so if you're Evander Kane, you say, well, that's a pretty good core, and Martin Jones is a pretty good goaltender. Like, that's a pretty good thing to work off.
Mm-hmm. And I think, too, even without Jumbo Joe in the mix. I think that leadership core is still very, very strong.
Oh, yes.
You know, I mean, you've got Joe Pavelski, you've got Brent Burns, you've got Mark Edward Vlasic, you've got some really good leaders on that team. So I think that's a situation where Evander Kane would be smart enough to say, yeah, okay, I've got to toe the line here. And San Jose, as much or more than any other team in the league, is, I think, really good at bringing people in and telling them. And part of this is because of Joe, who we're assuming won't be there. But they're really good at bringing players in and saying, okay, player X, this is how we do things around here. You know, this is the way we conduct ourselves. This is what we do. This is what we don't do. And we're going to need you to toe that line. And players almost always do.
Yep.
So I think that again would make it another good situation for a guy like Evander Kane.
Okay. Some good reader questions this week. We're going to start with Mart M2K, who has the Punisher logo as his little avatar.
Nice. Cool.
What's the biggest? Ken, we can't.
It's a comic book.
Right? Oh, is it? Yeah. Okay, sorry.
It's a great Netflix.
We don't have time.
We don't have time to tell you the story of Frank Castle.
Yeah.
So Mart M2K says, what's the biggest move we could see happen at the draft this year? I'll start with this one because I feel like we all know the answer.
Yeah, it's Eric Karlsson, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's an Eric Karlsson trade.
Right. Yeah.
I still maintain with 1 year left on his deal, it's not going to be as simple of a deal as it could have been.
No.
Because if you're the team acquiring him, are you getting him from 1 year? Or are you hoping an under-the-table guarantee of him signing an extension is involved?
Mm-hmm.
I don't, because he can't sign, it can't be announced until July 1st if he signs an extension.
Right.
So I think it's a pretty complicated deal.
It is, yeah.
But yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if it happens. And I feel like it's going to be Vegas. If somebody does it, it's going to be Vegas.
Yeah. 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 Yeah, I agree. I think that's going to be the biggest move at the draft without question.
Yeah.
But do you think it's going to happen?
I think there's a very... I don't know for sure it's going to happen at the draft, but it's going to happen. It's going to happen.
Yeah, and that's a good place.
And the draft is always the best place for these things to happen because you've got your picks in play. You know, you've got everything right there. Everybody's there. You know, it's easy to just walk across a draft floor and start a conversation. Yeah, so I think there's a very good chance it happens at the draft this year.
I concur. Yeah.
All right, next one's from Aaron Dykes. What will it take for the Canucks to become a contending team again, minus the Sedin?
He's at Mango Tazo.
At Mango Tazo.
Yeah, I don't know what that means. Like, is that like a Tazo chai made of mango?
I don't know. Could be.
Anyways, okay, what it will take for the Canucks to become a contending team, again, minus the Sedins, I think what it will take is time.
Yep.
I think what it takes is time, and it will take the rebuilding process that you have to go through.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think the worst, the absolute worst thing the Canucks could do right now is to go out and start signing middling free agents to try and be a decent team and a contending team.
Yeah, right.
That would be the worst thing. They've got a lot of cap space, and they should have a lot of cap space because their players aren't great. Like, right. You know, they don't have a lot of great players, so they should have a lot of cap space. But don't be seduced by having all this cap space that you can go out and sign a bunch of Thomas Vaneks and hope to maybe make the playoffs next year. There's going to be pain. You got to go through the pain, and you build your team the way it needs to be built. You've got the good thing about Vancouver is you've got a patient fan base. They're used to having crappy teams there.
Right.
and they're fairly loyal. They won't sell out, but they're not going to be. They're not going to move. So if you've got 2 or 3 years where it's pretty lean, people will put up with that. You've got that luxury. Use that luxury.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't have to build a contending team just for the sake of trying to maybe squeak into the playoffs. Do this the right way.
Yeah, and it's a sophisticated fan base where they know what it takes to rebuild. They know that it's going to take some years. Yeah, so don't sign James Neal this summer, Jim Benning.
Right.
Yeah, don't do it.
Even if you give him the most money.
Or Evander Kane.
Yeah, don't.
Or Evander Kane.
Yeah, don't. Yeah. Don't do that. Don't do those things.
Yeah. When I look at the Vancouver Canucks, I see a lot of hope because they've ticked off a lot of boxes already for a rebuild, and it will take time. But I think if they played the kids a lot next season, it could be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
They're not necessarily going to win a ton of games, but it'll be entertaining.
Well,
and I think
like this year, they'll start out real well, and then they'll
might be like the New Jersey Devils, sort of thing. But if you look at what they have at their disposal right now, so your goalie of the future is Thatcher Demko. He's only about a year or two away, I would say. I would like to see him get some NHL starts, a little more consistently, but I still think he should be the starter in Utica, just getting those reps. But you give him more of a taste next season. On the defense, you got Chris Tanev, you hold on to him. He's kind of your bridge guy. Oliolevi, I think he's still got some work to do, but there's something there. You're probably going to take a defenseman in the draft right now. You're in that slot in the top 10. Maybe it's Evan Bouchard. Maybe it's Quinn Hughes. Maybe it's Adam Boqvist. Kind of depends on how everything shakes out. But you're going to get a very good defenseman there. So that's nice too. Your defense core, it's coming along. Up front is where it's the most promising, because Bo Horvat is already a very good center. Then you got Elias Pettersson coming in, mm-hmm. who... his ceiling's pretty high. Let's see how he does in North America, but either he's your number one center or Horvat's your number one center. They play a completely different style, but they're both very talented.
Yeah.
You got Adam Gaudette, who can be more of a depth center for you. And then, you got some real talent on the wings.
Don't forget Brock Besser.
You got a sniper in Brock Besser. So you've already got a lot of nice pieces, and you've got more kids coming up. All different skill sets, like Will Lockwood will come up in a couple of years. He'll be a great bottom six guy for you. So there's a lot of hope. And yeah, Ken, you nailed it. Like, it's just going to take time. But I think the important thing is they have all the assets. They have the foundation. It's just a matter of getting these kids to, get used to each other, to get chemistry, to have those transition guys like Chris Tanev that can stick around and show them the ropes, because the Sedins are gone, but I have the feeling the Sedins will be on the phone anytime Vancouver needs them. and you just enjoy some fun, mistake
prone
hockey that is entertaining because it's kids learning. And you just hope that they hit the way we think that most of these kids can hit.
And I think too, that the other important thing too is they've got a coach that's growing along with them as a coach, as an NHL coach, so you don't have Mike Keenan or Ken Hitchcock going, this sucks, I'm not doing this.
Right.
No. Get me some players, you're not going to have a guy who's doing that. You're going to have a coach conceivably who's saying, I'm willing to grow along with this team. I'm willing to be part of this growth process. Mm-hmm. And we are all going to take our lumps.
Yeah.
And I am, my coaching record, win-loss record is going to take a hit here. But we all realize that it's part of a bigger picture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's interesting. I'm going to make a pre-prediction. Not an official prediction, but a pre-prediction.
All right.
Every year there's a team that's in rebuild mode that's supposed to take longer, and their kids are better sooner than expected. It was the Leafs 2 years ago.
Yep.
It was New Jersey this year.
Yeah. Yep.
And I'm going to pre-predict that Vancouver's going to make the playoffs next year. Elias Pettersson's going to win the Calder Trophy. And obviously Besser's going to be Besser. Horvat's going to be Horvat. Mm. I don't know. I assume Ulevi doesn't make the team. And I do agree, Ryan. They're going to take a defenseman. I think they're going to take whichever one of those three between Hughes, Boqvist, and Bouchard is available.
Yeah.
They're going to take.
Yeah.
And, probably we won't see one of those guys in the NHL
maybe
yet,
Bouchard.
But you never know. Yeah, Bouchard is
Bouchard,
so mature.
Bouchard, he's a 99 birthday.
Yeah, Boqvist, you won't see.
Yeah.
Hughes,
probably not.
Yeah.
But I think they've got enough exciting young talent, and especially up the middle, if Pettersson, and I really do think Pettersson will make the team.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's ready.
Well, you're predicting he's going to win the Calder Trophy.
Yeah.
He will make the team.
He made the Calder Cup.
Yeah. And, you could, depending on what San Jose does in the offseason, they could be on the way down. I mean, LA, you never know. Mm-hmm. It's hard. Mm-hmm. They had a lot of veteran guys who did unexpected things. There could be a little opening to exploit in the Pacific Division next year. So I don't know. I have this early hunch.
It's a good pre-prediction.
It's not outrageous.
And because of the no pressure factor, right? That's what people said about the Leafs, especially 2 years ago. Oh, it'll be fun.
Yeah.
And no pressure, and there you go. One last question from Devon Genoble. What will happen to Vegas next year? Got guys to sign and other decisions to make, and will William Karlsson be able to score 43 goals again? And I mean, when he says, or he or she says guys to sign, I mean, it's referring to James Neal and David Perron, I think, specifically. Because they've extended a lot of their other guys, but they can't extend everybody.
See, I think it's their RFAs that are the really, the ones that you really have to watch. The William Karlssons, the Colin Millers, the Shea Theodores. I mean, those are the guys, I think. I mean, James Neal and David Perron, they could afford to lose them.
Yeah.
They could afford for those guys to walk.
Maybe one of them at least.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, so then your real, you know, your real decision comes with William Karlsson. Mm-hmm. And he's at, he or she, whoever, you know, that's the crux of it here.
Yeah.
Is
it a bridge deal or do you believe
it's not necessarily will William Karlsson score 43 goals again? It's, is William Karlsson a consistent 30 goal scorer in the NHL?
Yeah.
Or is he a 9 goal scorer, a 10 goal scorer in the NHL?
Yeah.
Is he going to have a shooting percentage of 25% again next year? Probably not. But if that goes down to 18 or 20, maybe he's still a 30 goal scorer.
Mm.
You know, what is William Karlsson? That's what they have to decide.
Yeah.
And I mean, what William Karlsson did this year would suggest that he's closer to being what he is now than what he was. But these things have a funny way of being very fluid, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And so I think that's where their big, that's where their big questions are.
Yeah, I think they take a bit of a step back because they can no longer play the no one believed in us card.
Yeah.
Especially if they end up with a parade in the summer. But I still think they'll be pretty good. And yeah, I mean, Karlsson, that's a tough one because you're looking at this incredible lightning in a bottle season. So they got to be careful with that contract because, you know, we were talking about this earlier. The Vegas came in with no bad contracts. They took on a couple because, you know, they
because
got
they,
assets
yeah,
out of it.
They got assets.
But they're in such a good they're in such good shape right now. And, you know, talking about prospects, like, they can let the Cody Glasses and Nick Suzuki's and Eric Lundstroms of the world come in at their own pace because they don't need them to fill holes immediately like we thought they might have before Vegas actually played hockey. So there's good flexibility there. I think they'll come down to earth a bit, but I still think they're going to be a very dangerous team because they're a fast team, and that's how the game is played now. It's hard to defend against a team that skates so well with so much depth.
Two teams have made a big mistake on William Karlsson.
Right.
Two teams have already misjudged his talent level. Anaheim and Columbus, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Vegas is sitting there going, do we want to be like, okay, fool me once, whatever. Like, but now it would be like, if William Karlsson ends up being a player, then Vegas is like, you know, I mean, if we swing and miss on this, then we really look like a bunch of dolts.
Yeah. And he might be this generation's Martin St. Louis. Just late bloomer finally got a chance and mm-hmm. a much
yeah.
better player
mm-hmm.
than anyone thought. If I'm George McPhee, what I do with this contract is I do what Dallas did with John Klingberg, okay? So Dallas drafted John Klingberg 132nd, 131st overall. A couple years ago, he has a monster season. And Dallas decided they didn't give him a bridge deal. They gave him a long-term deal that was enough to justify expecting him to be really good. But they also thought, okay, if he's really this good and is always going to be this good, then this is going to be a bargain price.
Mm.
So I think that's what you shoot for William Karlsson. If he's a 43-goal scorer every year, then he's, I don't know, a $7 or $8 million player. But maybe you pay him a long-term deal at $5 million because you might be able to... He might be willing to agree and bet on that as well because he's only done it once.
Right.
So maybe you find a number
five
that
over
is...
Five.
It's not an overpay. It's not an underpay.
Well, then their whole first line makes $5 million. All three of them make $5 million.
Oh,
Ryan Smith, Marchessault.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I don't know. Like, is five going to do it?
Maybe not.
I don't know if five does it.
Maybe
the good thing here. The good thing here, though, guys, is he's a restricted free agent with arbitration rights.
Mm.
Right? So that means that even if he doesn't take the team to arbitration, they can take him to arbitration, right? So he's gonna be in the lineup next year and he's gonna be under contract.
Yeah.
Because either he's gonna go to arbitration or like failing him not signing a long term deal, either he's gonna go to arbitration or the Knights are gonna take him to arbitration.
Right.
Mm.
And I'm not 100% sure on this. I should have checked it with my agent friends, but he's 25 years old, so I think he can be subject to a 2-year deal in arbitration, not just a 1-year deal. So if that's the case, you got him for 2 more years. So if he goes to arbitration, you've effectively got a bridge contract,
right?
Yeah,
anyways,
yeah.
Right? So they bought some time. So they're okay there, you know. And it's almost like, yeah, you could use that to kind of figure out where he's at.
Totally.
Right? And then you know, but in ARB, you know, you go to ARB, you end up. The arbitrator looks at it and goes, what? 43 goals? $10 million.
That's right. Jeez.
Like,
yeah, what's wrong in this kid? And I mean, the playoffs have been almost a second sample size for him. I mean, it's all still the same season, but it's still interesting that he's been just as good, if not
better. He hasn't wilted at all. And,
right.
Like, I mean, he's been, like, ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that release, I mean, visually, I mean, we're not, the eye test generation is fading away, but it doesn't hurt to see just how good that release is. Like, it certainly looks like a shot that's going to keep finding the net.
Yeah, that overtime goal was ridiculous.
Yeah, so, yeah. There is a correlation between high skill players and high shooting percentages. Like sure. Patrick Laine, because he's got a really good shot. Right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah, when you have a good shot, you tend to score.
Yeah, you tend to score a lot.
Guys that don't have
based
a good
on
shot.
That, I mean, I think Carlson's shooting percentage is going to stay high going forward.
But 20,
maybe not.
Not 25%.
Maybe not,
right?
Like, absurdly high, but yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Well, that's it for this week, everyone. We'll keep enjoying this crazy Vegas quest, and watch out if anybody tries to lick you on the street. It might be Brad Marchand, because he's not playing in the playoffs anymore.